I can't believe they didn't do Wainwright. I mean, I'm really stunned they didn't rank Adam Wainwright.
Check.
I think Adam Wainwright just gotten a lot better since the Braves got rid of him, to be honest with you. I think Dave Duncan's done things with him that have helped. He also, I could go on my tangent about South Georgia right pitchers versus Atlanta East Cobb pitchers. The best pitchers are all from South Georgia, not from Northern Georgia. Zach Wheeler trying to change that. So.
A lot less innings on the arm.
That's it. Well, I guess we're ready to start. I am going to do a quick World Cup intro, but not that much.
Yeah, keep that part short. And the one thing I will say is this.
They're playing Sunday live on MLB Network.
And the one thing I'd say that we want to make sure we don't do is just sit here and read through these lists.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why we kind of have the, you know, we can pull out the 11 to 20, that kind of thing, so we can keep it moving relatively well.
Okay, well, we'll come on in 3, 2, 1. Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. My name is John Manuel. Thanks so much for the download. I'm joined by J.J. Cooper today here at the BA headquarters in soggy Durham, North Carolina. We thank you for joining us. And, of course, you can follow us in many, many ways, baseballamerica.com. You can download us at iTunes. You can follow BA at Twitter, at our Twitter feed. Many ways to consume Baseball America as a product. We got some video last week up of the USA Baseball 18 and under team. So keep on covering baseball from a scouting and player development point of view over many platforms here in the early 21st century. So JJ and I, with a little bit different take on this week's podcast, we're in the middle of prospect ranking season's first giant project, which is the League Top 20s. And JJ and I each have one league to rank. And one of the features of that those League Top 20s, JJ, is going and listing here the rankings from 5 years ago, kind of a unique thing I think that we've always done to let us know how our rankings looked. We always are trying to let readers know what our track record is, and then I think we have the most transparent process anyone could possibly have. No one I know chats about every single ranking that we do. If we rank college teams, we chat about it. If we rank league prospects, we chat about it. If we rank an organization's prospects, we chat about it. We are pretty, I think we really don't try to hide how we do any of these things here in our process at Baseball America. So one of the things we decided to do was look back at 5 years ago and see not just how did our rankings turn out, but who do we miss?
Right.
And I think what we're finding, JJ, is we did pretty well 5 years ago, and the guys that we missed, there's some patterns for who the guys were that we missed.
Well, and let's, you know, start with, I mean, this was not a backpedaling exercise. We kind of went into this not knowing, you know, hey, let's see how we did. And
yeah.
It could have come out, you know, I think we still would have done a podcast even if it had been something where we'd gone, wow, we really missed on a lot of guys.
But I think more of the gnashing of teeth in the office, I think there's more gnashing of teeth over guys we missed than there is patting on backs, with the exceptions of, you know, some of us who are louder than others, like, say, me. I do both of those are equally loud. So
but
I think most people are harder on themselves than they are complimentary.
And it is useful also just as we look at this. And we kind of said – basically what we did is we went back to the 2004 season, and we went team by team, and we said, okay, which players from this team became big league regulars? And we tried to set a pretty – strong threshold on that. We didn't say made it to the big leagues.
I think we were fairly strict.
I mean, it was, you know, it was what we essentially came down to was, okay, if a guy had 350 or so at bats in a season or multiple seasons of 300 at bats, that guy's basically a big league regular.
Some of our tougher calls were guys like a Jack Hanahan was a tough call. He's had two seasons with 300 plus at bats. One year where he was basically an everyday player for the Athletics. Now, he hasn't hit in those 2 years, but he's been there for 2 years. He's probably, like as Will Lingo just said today, he's probably going to get a pension.
Right.
So Matt Eddy had suggested another line of demarcation for us, like are they ever going to get arbitration eligible. We didn't have any hard rules.
And we didn't
really
say that
gut
because
feel.
We were talking about 5 years ago, so if you talk about a guy from the Saudi League 5 years ago, well, there's a pretty good chance that he's not going to be, you know, yet. We're not talking about arbitration yet or anything, but But we did try to set it as we're not talking here about guys who made it for a cup of coffee. We're saying because the reality is that, you know, well, more than Josh Anderson, even, you know, we're talking. I'm talking about, you know, we're really not talking about the guys who, yes, we get to put an asterisk by them as made to big leagues, but
we're talking about guys who are making contributions to major league teams.
Right.
That was really. That's why I was a little bit nebulous. So.
Partly because when we were ranking this, no one is looking at this saying, ooh, wow, I think that this guy 5 years from now will have had three innings in the big leagues.
Exactly. That's not a mark of a good ranking or not. So why don't we start with the leagues that we did 5 years ago, okay. JJ. And correct me if I'm wrong, you did the Florida State League.
Right.
And you're still doing the Florida State League.
I did the Eastern League my first year here in, in 2003. And then since then, I've done the FSL ever since.
So you are the Florida State League maven. No one knows minor league games that no one goes to, like
yes,
J.J. Cooper.
Say.
Indie ball, that's just not nice.
Hey, that was not nice.
That was not nice toward indie ball, and J.J. did not appreciate that. But you've done the Florida State League for 5 years now, so that's kind of neat. And the Florida State League that year, let's face it, that was a pretty loaded league.
And we at the time we gave that league and the Sally League, the two leagues we did, were the two leagues that we gave 5 stars that year to, because we did rank them as far as who is the, you know, which leagues have the most talent.
And, of course, the Sally League that year was famous for its the Delmon Young, Ian Stewart, Lastings Millage trio, guys who played together with USA Baseball on, like, junior and youth national teams, and then were all in the South Atlantic League. That trio hasn't quite worked out as people thought.
Not as expected.
They've all still been regulars on a big league club. Ian Stewart has probably made the biggest impact this year as a real corner power guy for the Rockies, and even he hasn't been necessarily the everyday guy for Colorado, but I think he's third on the team in home runs, one of four Rockies with 20-plus home runs, and they're making a playoff run. But JJ, the Florida State League was loaded that year, and 24 guys from the Florida State League that year, by our research, have become big league regulars. And I'd say the fringiest of those big league regulars is Jason Mott. And we didn't rank him, but that's because he was a catcher at the time, but we knew he was going to move to the mound sooner or later because he hit 187 with 94 strikeouts.
Best defensive catcher of year in and year out. We always voted him. He was always the best defensive catcher, it seemed like, until he finally made the move. And once he made the move, he moved pretty quickly up through the system.
So, I mean, like some of the guys that we missed on, quote-unquote missed on, are guys like Casey McGee, who was set free talent,
right.
Minor league free agent signing this year. Rich Hill, who's been awful in the big leagues this year but did have two very good years for the Cubs. You know, came close to 200 innings that year at his peak. So that guy made a big league contribution. But the rest of these guys, there are a lot of studs in here, JJ. I mean, Hanley Ramirez and Josh Johnson, the two best players in the Marlins, their best hitter and their best pitcher. You could argue an MVP candidate year in and year out, and a Cy Young candidate, or I would argue Josh Johnson, the true number one myself. Talk a little bit about how that Florida State League felt at the time and maybe how it looks through the prism of 5 years back.
Well, in the prism, I mean, the one obviously I cringe at is number one, Joel Guzman, who at the time...
I didn't even remember that. He was number one.
He was number one. At the time,
Goo.
The scouting report at the time was, hey, this guy is extremely athletic for his size. He has excellent power. But beyond that, yeah, he's not a shortstop. He's playing shortstop now. He won't probably stay at shortstop, but he actually is not brutal at shortstop. And you move him to third, no problem at all.
And the thing is, we've seen a lot of Joel Guzman. He played
right,
in Durham a couple of years.
Several years.
Not this year.
Yeah.
This year, Joel Guzman actually still eligible for my Eastern League list. But I know people won't be shocked. I haven't even asked about Joel Guzman.
But and what happened in the hindsight, you know, he got a lot bigger. He got a lot slower. And the bat did not, you know, the bat did not take the steps. He did not take the steps forward with the bat as far as pitch recognition and all.
If that guy had made any adjustments, JJ, I still think he would have been a big league starting corner infielder. Would he have been a star? Would he have been better than some of the other guys on that list? No. But that power was, I mean, having done a lot of those Bulls games and seen some of the home runs Joel Guzman hit, I haven't seen anybody hit home runs as far as he hits them. His power is 80 raw power. But it's just there's nothing fast twitch about the guy. I think that's what happened.
Right.
Conditioning and just the fact that he just got to be so big is what kept him from reaching his ceiling.
So 2, 3, 4 though. Chad Billingsley 2, Hanley Ramirez 3, Scott Kazmir 4. That's a solid group. You know, I'm not gonna go through and read the whole list, but the guys that I really, you know, hang my head about missing on from that list. Russ Martin was number 21 on the list, which. In hindsight, he should have been higher than that.
It's fun to go back and look at the chats.
Yeah, look back in the chats.
It's
like,
chats.
And the guys mentioned in the chats is like, okay, yes, Russ Martin, Josh Johnson just missed on. Like,
yeah.
You know.
We were always a little low on that guy. He was a 6th-round pick out of high school. I think we're always a little skeptical of how high his ceiling was. I'm not quite sure why.
Joel Zamaya was also in that 21 to 25 rankings. The thoughts with the Zamaya was is that he's probably just a power arm out of the pen.
Right, which is what he's been.
Which is what he's been. You know, in hindsight, he probably should have still made it. Scott Baker was probably in that 25 to 40 range.
And he was a guy who was tough to rank that year because the Twins were very aggressive pushing him to their farm system. It was his first full year out of college, and I think he finished the year in AAA. And he was only eligible, I think, in the Florida State League. I think it was 49 innings in the FSL, and then like 40 in another league and 40 in another league. So he didn't really – those guys are tough to rank, because especially when you're talking to managers and scouts, especially in the league they start in, not a lot of guys are doing pro coverage in April and May.
Right.
If they are, Florida State League is one of the leagues where they're going to do it, because you might break camp from spring training and stay in Florida. But it's just very hard to necessarily get a great look at a guy who zooms through a league like that.
The guys who, on the other end of the scale, the guys who are ranked, you know, we talked about Joel Guzman. Three other guys in the top 10. Felix Pia is kind of on that. He's still not, but at the same time, he's still young enough.
He's come closest to establishing himself this year, and he's actually done better. Since Nolan Reimel started getting banged up and PA got more playing time, he's played better in Baltimore.
The jury, I think we can still say, is still out on PA.
He's starting to finally show signs of actually being a regular, which is encouraging.
But Eric Duncan, number 10 on the list, the jury's not out. The jury is that he never took the step forward. I mean,
the jury has returned a verdict, counselor, and it is guilty as charged.
And basically, he showed some power and all back then, but... there was worries about whether he'd stick at third, and then really the bat just disappeared the next year.
And he had throwing mechanics issues that were always the question at third. And I think if you want to be charitable, which I think it's fair to say that the guy did have back issues, and those back issues are going to affect your swing, and they're going to affect your ability to play third base. So he moved down the defensive spectrum. The offensive expectations became higher.
And he just
I don't think it was in him necessarily to live up to those expectations, and I think he tried too hard. He tried to hit home runs, and you're not going to hit home runs. And I saw him in AAA in the playoffs just last week, and it was a little bit sad, frankly, to see, because the guy's just not what he used to be.
Tony Giratano, number 9. That was injuries really is, I'd say, probably the biggest thing that happened with him. He was probably overrated at that point at number 9.
He got the asterisk. He did get to the big leagues.
He got to the big leagues, and then basically, you know, was done very quickly.
Correct.
I think he's an indie ball, actually.
I think he is. I think injuries are a big part of that, but I don't think his bat ever was quite as good as we thought he was.
Right, and that was, and then Mike Hinckley, number 7, who...
Injuries, expos. He did get to the big leagues. He made a nice impact last September. He pitched 10 scoreless innings. I'm not sure what happened to him this year. I remember I actually had a glimmer of hope for Mike Hinckley last year. Not quite sure what happened to him this year, but in last August and September, he actually threw well in the big leagues for the Nationals, but... a pretty good Florida State League list,
so
and it deserved 5 stars. That's
20,
for sure.
24 guys from the Florida State League that year have become big league regulars. 24 were in the league that year. 12 of them were on the basically our top 20. So you could say essentially we batted 50%. We batted better than that from the standpoint that, like we said, David Murphy, Casey McGee, Rich Hill, you know. Matt Lindstrom, a lot of the guys who we didn't rank are ones, you know, if you were re-ranking it right now, those guys would probably still be the ones who would rank at the tail end of a top 25, of the top 24.
Right.
But, you know, so about, you know, got 12 of the, if you looked at your FSL list in 2004, 12 of those have become very solid big leaguers.
That's not bad. And then the South Atlantic League, which I don't do anymore, it's a 16-team league. I've moved on to the Eastern League most years now. So we had 28 players from the Saturday League have gone on to the big leagues, which is pretty impressive, I think. Actually, even though it's a huge league like that, that's a number, just in sheer numbers.
28 solid big league regulars is a...
that's rivaling the International League.
I mean, think about that. That's a player and a half per team.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I mean, the PCL is another 16-team league, and it is in AAA, and it produced, what, 30 big leaguers?
Yeah, 31. So
30,
yeah.
Because Dan Herring was a qualified.
30, yeah, 30.
So, I mean, the Saturday League ranking with those AAA leagues is pretty impressive. Now, I don't have how I rank the league in front of me. JJ has that. But I know that the top was Delman Young, Ian Stewart, Lassings Millage. And I remember the time wanting to rank Ian Stewart ahead of Delman Young. I'm not saying that I wasn't on Delman Young because I was. I thought Delman Young was going to be a star. I still think he potentially could be a star, but that chance is pretty pretty low.
It's just diminishing every year as the power just
stays. He clearly has raw power. That's never been the issue.
But I'm saying that the power never seems to show.
Well, he's 11 walks and 82 strikeouts. That's the whole thing. He just does not control the strike zone. He doesn't make any attempt to control the strike zone. The reason I still hold out hope for him is that stubborn hitters, he's stubborn. That's his biggest problem. He doesn't make adjustments, and he's stubborn. Mark Reynolds is a stubborn hitter. Now, Mark Reynolds is so stubborn in that he has no two-strike approach. He doesn't care if he strikes out 200-plus times. Yet he's still productive. I think Mark Reynolds would be even more productive if he had a semblance of a two-strike approach.
Right.
But it's hard to argue with the results. I think Delman Young should be able to look in the mirror and realize that his approach is not working. So we'll see if he adjusts. I still think – I say that he still has frontline all-star talent, but he's brutal defensively and doesn't make adjustments there. He's gotten slightly better, but not a lot better. And he's surrounded by good defensive outfielders. And then he hasn't made any adjustments to the plate. Ian Stewart, I still think, is on track to be a big league starter and an impact third baseman with the power that he's shown this year. The Rockies are a very conservative organization. Plus, they've had Garrett Atkins. So Garrett Atkins is going to be gone after this year. Ian Stewart will really get his chance to establish himself next year. Lastings Millage, I'm done with Lastings Millage. Just not good enough in center field. Doesn't hit enough to be a corner guy. We predicted that he'd hit for more power there, and he's just not going to do it. The biggest, I guess, really hit in that top 10, to be honest with you, is still probably Ian Stewart. The top 10 is just not great, bottom line. The biggest miss, the guy that we ranked, that's the other thing, really. There's not really a superstar, JJ, out of the 28 guys who have become big leaguers, with the exception, I would say, of Matt Kemp.
Right, if you re-ranked it right now, would you say Matt Kemp number one?
I think I'd say Matt Kemp number one, and I think I might even say Nick Markakis number two. And I'm stunned that I didn't rank Nick Markakis. I looked back in the chat. I didn't look up Matt Kemp in the chat yet, but I did look up Nick Markakis, and I had him in the 21 to 25 range. For anybody who listens to this podcast, you know I'm Greek, and I can't believe I didn't rank Nick Markakis in the top 20, just like as the number 20 guy. But the guys who did rank and did make it are all guys who are like solid big leaguers. Guys like Michael Bourne, Jared Saltalamacchia, Chris Young, now the Diamondbacks, who's had one impact year, but his lack of play discipline. But Matt Kemp had no play discipline in that league that year. I think it was a 25-92 walk strikeout ratio. I'm pretty sure that's why I didn't rank him.
You actually, there's a chat question back then that you had. You're available online if you just go to our rankings archive on the prospect.
Go to rankings home.
Rankings
drop down under prospects. Rankings home. There they are.
And you said Columbus was full of prospects. Frankly, I could have done a top 10 just on Columbus. He said, I would go Chuck Tiffany, Andy LaRoche, Ching Lung Hu, Jeremy Millens, Xavier Paul, Matt Kemp, Julio Pimentel, Marcos Carvajal, Mike Nixon, and Tony Abreu.
Wow. That's really sad to read that I had it behind Xavier Paul. But I can tell you, after that ranking came out, and I was talking to Logan White about something, Logan White told me, boy, I can't believe he didn't rank Matt Kemp. And I said, really? I mean, sixth-round pick, I know he's athletic. Sounds like there's a long way to go for the bat. And he goes, no, there's not that long to go with the bat. He's going to make
it.
And not only is he going to make it, he's going to be a star. Logan's confidence in Matt Kemp is what stood out the most for me at that point. He was so confident that Matt Kemp not only would make it, but would be a star. He was right. I was wrong. Good lesson learned. But I think the funny thing, JJ, is the guys that I ranked who didn't make it are Adam Miller, Chuck Tiffany, Clint Everts, Jacob Stevens, Scott Matheson, Josh Anderson, Ching Lung Hu. Josh Anderson and Ching Lung Hu have at least gotten the Astros.
They're hanging in that range where you could see in either case. Josh Anderson, this is the best opportunity possible for him.
He's playing for bad teams.
Right.
The Tigers gave him a chance because center field has been a black hole for them when Granderson was hurt. So now he's playing every day for the Royals. He's going to get close to 300 plate appearances this year, and he does have 22 steals, but he just can't hit.
Whereas, and who... I could see a very similar situation eventually working out for him because, I mean, heck, if you're the Royals this year, if you could have had Ching Lung Hu.
He would have become a regular this year if he'd been with the Royals. And that is a guy who, there's been some injuries, but the bat was just not as good as we thought it would be. The other misses for me are pitchers. And obviously, I think I know a lot more about pitching now than I used to. That's really what I'm most passionate about. And the guys I missed on were low Class A pitchers who've all had injury issues. Since then, Adam Miller's had all these finger problems. Chuck Tiffany's arm was ruined, shoulder, and Clint Everts had Tommy John surgery. I actually got a fairly optimistic Clint Everts report in the Eastern League this year, if you believe it. I don't believe he's going to be a big league star. I do believe Clint Edwards is going to get that asterisk, though.
Right.
Just not in time. I think Jacob Stevens, low class A pitcher, who never had stuff as good subsequently as he did when he did when I ranked him. And then Matheson's had Tommy John twice. So Scott Matheson's had Tommy John twice and actually is back in the Eastern League this year
and this is
hard.
And this is a good lesson also, and we talk about this.
Right.
When you come to pitchers, not that you don't rank them or anything, but you have that understanding, like this is why we say it's good for a team to have, you want a team to have five or six good pitching prospects, not one or two, because even, you know, injuries do happen more often to pitchers than they do to position players. There's not anyone,
especially in low A.
Right. If you're talking, especially if you're talking about guys in A ball, there aren't that many. When you talk about position players who miss, what you usually talk about is the bat didn't develop as much as we thought.
Right.
They had to move off the position defensively, and they weren't able to handle it. And every now and then you have an injury pop in. When you talk about pitchers, a lot of the time, it's that, you know, well, yeah, their stuff was never as good because they blew their arm out, their shoulder.
One other thing is I do think it's reasonable to bring up here, and whichever version of the podcast you're listening to on the Baseball America podcast, that 5 years ago there was not testing for steroids
right.
in the minor leagues. And I do think that PED issues are very reasonable. And I know I've talked about this with people in front offices. Even if you're talking about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I think as recently as 5 years ago, it was very difficult to know when guys improved, if they improved because they got bigger and stronger and they matured physically, or if they got bigger and stronger because they had help. And I think it is very reasonable to look back with some skepticism at some of the radar gun readings or home run totals that players had five, 10 years ago, and maybe why those guys didn't work out. Well, there might have been another reason that we don't know, and it's not reasonable to accuse an individual player, but it is very reasonable to be skeptical in hindsight of some of these players.
Right.
Some of the other leagues that we went on, JJ, basically we went back and tried to look at some of our bigger misses, and it seemed like the biggest thread was there was a pitcher per league, but we generally at higher levels – we missed on some hitters, and we missed on some hitters who I'm surprised that we missed on in some of them. And then the lower levels, well, in the Southern League, we definitely missed on some pitchers. In the Midwest League, we
missed on
pitchers.
Dopierik,
Duncan,
no,
Wood.
Okay, sorry.
At the top of the list, we missed on hitters.
Missed on hitters is in thought hitters were better than they were.
Brian Dopierik, Eric
guys,
Duncan, Brandon Wood.
No, I'm talking about the other side of it, which is the guys we missed on the Midwest League, that we missed on Edison Volquez, you know, is Nick Blackburn.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Carlos Marmol. Yes, the other side of it. Those kind of guys we missed on, yes. To compare apples and apples, you're correct. So, it was the guys who have made major league careers for themselves and who were not ranked in our top 20. Yes, at lower levels, those were more pitchers that we missed on, and it was more hitters that we missed on the top, like guys like Kevin Youkilis, Nate McLouth, Giovanni Soto,
Dan Uggla,
Nelson Cruz. I guess I'm most surprised we missed on Youkilis because we've written so much about him in college, but he definitely was not a toolsy guy, so maybe it's a typical. Maybe
I don't think if you ranked him now, like I don't think we would. I think that stage of BA is gone in some ways. That I think Euclid would be a, you know.
Well, the
thing
is, he wasn't hitting for power, even in the upper minors still. So that he wasn't a profile player, even though he was walking and getting on base a lot. So that's still, I think, would still be a concern today.
I mean, and the other guy, like Giovanni Soto, he, you know, was not. I mean, that's the thing with catchers is that catchers can emerge late. Because
honestly, Giovanni Soto, to me, he's made his impact in the major leagues. If he stinks again next year, he will not really go down as a guy who was an established big leaguer, but he was the rookie of the year. So it's hard to say he didn't have an impact.
Nelson Cruz, Dan Uggla, both were guys, I'd say, you know, especially Cruz's case was he always did produce.
Right.
But it was
when he got to the big leagues, he didn't. He struck out too much, basically.
Right. But it was worries about the strikeouts, worries about the position for
That's
him.
A guy who changed the organization several times, trades. I think there was a waiver claim in there. He's had a huge year this year. He's a 30-20 guy this year for the Rangers. But Dan Uggla was a Rule 5 pick. And a guy who honestly never showed huge home run power in the minors. He hit, didn't have huge home run power until he really got to the major leagues. Chin Ming Wong is a guy we missed on in the Eastern League. That's a little bit surprising.
Well, but if I remember with Wong, though, what happened was is that he really, like, and this is something also that can happen with pitchers, is you can have a guy as a pitcher who, and this is where, I mean, projection gets really difficult.
Right.
That if you evaluate him at the time, no. But he finds a pitch, he finds a grip, he, you know, makes a little adjustment, and takes a big step forward.
Well, he made a huge adjustment because he had elbow injury and had to change his slot a little bit, basically, not elbow, shoulder, and really went from being a fastball, curveball kind of a power pitcher to being a sinker guy. So,
and that's when he all of a sudden became
completely. Yeah, and he changed completely as a pitcher, really.
And when you're trying to evaluate a guy like that before that change, it's pretty hard to rank him, you know, accurately. And that happens. The thing that jumped out to me was we went league by league, and in the best league, 14 in the IL, 14 of the 20 guys we ranked have become solid big league regulars. In the worst league, in the Midwest League and the Texas League, 9 of the 20 became solid big league regulars. And in the Texas League case of that, only 15 guys in that league have become solid big league regulars.
It's actually 10 in the Midwest League because I left out Sean Marshall. Ten
in the Midwest League have become solid big
league. And Dana Evelyn is right on that fringe. Actually, I was counting him as the 10th. He's right on that fringe of whether he's an established big leaguer or not.
And
Randy Wells could also be on that fringe.
But PCL 13 of the 20, IL 14 of the 20, EL 12 of the 20, Southern League 11 of the 20, Texas League 9 of the 20, Carolina League 10.
10 of the 12.
Yeah.
An 18 league.
Carolina League, 18 league, 10 of the 12 big league regulars were on the list, you know, and then the two guys who you say, you know, well, we missed on were Luke Scott and Fausto Carmona. Neither of whom has exactly had a dramatic impact.
If Fausto Carmona's had one great big league season, he was the number two starter on a team that nearly won the American League pennant. He's been awful since then. He's horrendous this year. And then Luke Scott is exactly the kind of guy that you probably should rank at the back of a top 20. He's a starter on a second division team, but on a first division championship caliber ball club, the guy's an extra bat. That's what he is.
And 11 in the Cal League, 12 in the Florida State League, 10 in the Midwest League, 13 in the Saudi League. The numbers, though, that really jumped out to me, and this is when I started doing this. I started doing the Florida State League, which kind of started the idea of doing this, was how is just that understanding. Now, that number of, you know, how many guys actually make it to the big leagues as regulars from a league? You know, when we rank 20, really, that's somewhere around that range of the number of how many guys down the road. Now, these numbers that we're talking about here may go up a little bit.
But this is 1 year, obviously. The sample size is...
Right, this is 1 year, and we're talking about 5 years away, when if you go and we did this 10 years away, the reality of this is that you probably would see two or three more guys because a guy who takes a long time to make it, you know, that kind of thing. But that being said, you know, when we get these when we do these chats, it's worth us remembering. Like when we get asked, you know, okay, well, that guy would have been in my, you know, 25 to 30 range. That guy would have been in the 35 to 40. And when we say that, you know, you can easily rank 40 guys in a league, but you're almost never going to see 40 guys from a league actually end up becoming big league regulars.
I think that would be, and again, we're talking about the five-star league, the Florida State League, which did have high-end talent and does have, 14 teams in it. It still only had 24 future regulars. Now, those future regulars are significant impact guys.
Right, you've got Papelbon, you've got Hanley Ramirez, you've got Scott Olson, you've got Josh Johnson, you've got John Lester, Chad Billingsley. I mean, there were some impact guys in that league, but yeah.
The thing is, the Eastern League was the truth that year. The Eastern League was an extremely deep league with guys like Ryan Howard. Aaron Hill jumps out to me as a guy who's
Curtis Granderson,
a star kind of season. Yeah, I mean,
Matt Cain.
Yeah,
David Wright was number one.
Robinson Cano. I mean, this was a very good league in terms of star power, but also in terms of its depth. Guys like Scott Baker and Brandon League and Garrett Jones has got 20 home runs to lead all major league rookies this year, was in the Eastern League that year. So I still think the best way to rank, to decide, like the Eastern League with 33 guys, still that top level Eastern League talent does not, to me, compare necessarily to the East, to the FSL's top-level talent. We haven't even mentioned John Lester and Jonathan Papelbon on that Florida State League team, the Red Sox. How about the Red Sox in the Florida State League that year with Hanley Ramirez, David Murphy, Manny Del Carmen, John Lester, Jonathan Papelbon?
That's sick.
That's a loaded team. That would be a loaded league if those were the top five players in your league. That team had more talent than the entire Carolina League. The entire Carolina League. Who's the best Carolina leaguer from that year?
Brian McCann.
Honestly, it's Brian McCann, and there's nobody else even close. I mean, the next best one, save all your vitriol, Baseball Think Factory bloggers, the next best career there is Jeff Francoeur. I mean,
I would disagree with that because
don't tell me Roger Davis.
No, the reason I'd say that is Jeff Francoeur has lost more games. He's been bad for so long that those
Who were those guys that's been good? Who are those guys that's above average?
So we can bring everyone in the conversation.
I'm disagreeing with you.
The full list is Jeff Francoeur, Brian McCann, Josh Fields, Ryan Sweeney, Brandon McCarthy, Ryan Garko, Fausto Carmona, Luke Scott, Fernando Nieve, Raja Davis, Zach Duke, and Tom Gorzolani.
Who has the next best career there, JJ? This year he's league average.
Right, but he was also well below league average for 3 years.
I'm not sure. He was above average 1 year. You have to be a ref, Jeff Francoeur. But the other point is none of the rest of those guys. I mean, Josh Fields been back to the minors. Ryan Sweeney's a average or below average player. Brandon McCarthy constantly injured. That's a negative. I mean, I know that he's creating outs. Ryan Garko, look at Ryan Garko. He's been a below average offensive first baseman basically his whole career, and I love Ryan Garko. I hope Ryan doesn't listen to the podcast. But I mean, he was well above average. He was league average another year, and he's basically league average this year, slightly below. I mean, he's been well above average as a Met.
He's been
terrible as a Brave.
Yeah, I was going to say
he was actually terrible as a Brave.
But that sums up though. That league is the proof that like there are times where you can rank 20 guys in a league, and it's like, man, it's a struggle to rank 20.
I would have been very difficult to rank 20 that year.
Because, I mean, you're ranking 20 and you're ranking 8 guys. If you'd have done it perfectly, you're ranking 8 guys who have yet to become solid big league regulars.
I mean, that would be a hard one to look back on in retrospect and think you did a good job when it was really just the league.
And it really is. The thing about it is that Chris Klein, Chris Klein, since has left us to become a scout, but Chris Klein hit on, there's not really a miss he had in that league. I mean,
Neil Huntington must have had this data in front of him when they hired him to work for the Pirates.
I mean, and the funny thing is if you look at it, the guys who don't qualify, like, also are guys who made the big leagues. Michael Aubrey made the big leagues.
Yeah, Brian Anderson was a regular for a year. He was a bad regular.
Their second 10, Brad Eldred,
I think he made the big leagues. Yeah, I may be wrong, but I thought he got
Anthony LaRue got called up yesterday, I believe, for the Royals.
Wow. Well,
Chris Ray, number 16, has
he's had his moments with the Orioles.
That's Mitch Meyer, number 20. He's not a big league regular, but he's on that cusp.
He's on the fringe.
So
sure.
Really, I mean, he hit that list about as, that list is about as good as you can make.
Well, we only had 8 teams. How hard is it to cover an 8-team league? I think that's another lesson. It's hard to cover the big leagues. Midwest League is a tough league to cover. Sour League is a tough league to cover.
Right. And
Florida State League. And the GCL is actually the
toughest. I think the GCL ranks as the toughest. Nathan Rohde, you can go online right now. You can see his top 20. You can see his chat. But the GCL, because for one thing, you're talking about a league where there's so, teams don't play each other outside their division. So you have to get managers from their little pods, if you want to call them.
Right.
Because they don't see anyone outside of those leagues, outside of that little division. But beyond that, there's just so far away. Statistics mean very little at that level because guys can struggle that year and it means nothing almost long term.
Right.
And then beyond that, you also have all these players who show up who you know nothing about. Like,
well, even at the lower levels, just to go back to the Sour League, because we should wrap up this Baseball America podcast, but some of the guys who I did not rank who've become established big leaguers are guys like Aaron Laffey. Aaron Laffey had a 6 ERA that year. Elijah Dukes, who was suspended during the season for detrimental conduct and then was shipped out to the Cal League. In a 16-team league with a top 20, I'm not going to rank that guy. That's where my antipathy toward Elijah Dukes truly began. Matt Lindstrom was a starter at the time, profiled as a reliever. Niger Morgan was 25.
Not only profiled as a reliever, but I think he was also a 23-year-old
pitching
in that league because he'd come off a 2-year mission.
So a lot of the guys that we didn't rank, it was a profile issue. But I'm very disappointed that I didn't rank Nick Markakis. I'm disappointed I didn't rank Sean Markham, a guy I was very familiar with from college. And frankly, in retrospect, a little disappointed I didn't rank the crushing Russian, Kevin Kuzmanoff. Not that he's a star or anything, but I kind of wish I'd ranked him. One other thing on those complex leagues, one thing about this exercise, because right now we have Bill Mitchell on the ground in Arizona, and the Arizona League goes up, tomorrow or today?
Today. He's chatting. By the time you listen to this, he'll chat.
Chatted, right. But so the Arizona League's going up today, the day we're recording this podcast, and I'm curious, I don't think it's a problem that we don't go see all these players. You know, I didn't see any Eastern League games. Next year I'll get to go see Eastern League games. I'll drive it to Richmond. The Connecticut Defenders are moving to Richmond, and I don't know what their nickname will be. Maybe they'll be the Richmond Defenders. It'd be a good – actually, you wouldn't have to change the nickname, and you could just tie it into the Confederacy and put Eric Cartman dressed up like Robert E. Lee and have a nice tie-in. But I really do think that our process – we had two in-person basically leagues this year with Dave Perkin doing the California League and Bill Mitchell doing the Arizona League. And you know, Alan Simpson used to do our GCL, our complex leagues every year. And those were bad years for the complex league in 2004. But if you look at this 2005 complex league list, those are just insanely good and just right on. So I think those levels are the absolute toughest to rank. The GCL, probably the top player out of the GCL that year.
There was.
At least out of the top 20, the top guy, I guess you'd have to argue that it's either Carlos Carrasco, Carlos Gomez, or Jesus Flores. I don't know if Anthony Swarzak also has been in the big leagues. That's rough. In the Arizona League, a little bit rougher when you have Matt Bush ranked number 5. But you also that league had Giovanni Gallardo down at 13 and Kung Fu Panda himself, Pablo Sandoval, at 14.
Which, so, by the way, Pablo Sandoval, 14. Nice. That's
very nice. We used to be on Pablo Sandoval. I'm not sure how we got off Pablo Sandoval, but when he stopped being a catcher – we got off the train, even though he was hitting. I'm not quite sure why that happened, but it did. It did happen. So we'll have emails next week if you have them. Podcast@baseballamerica.com. Send those questions into us.
While you're listening to this podcast, we also are going to turn this into a story of some sort, since John and I spent several hours yesterday researching this.
There'll be some kind of blog post.
So you'll have something that you can look at with this as well.
But we do hope you enjoyed the podcast and enjoyed the research and the look back. And for the next few podcasts, we'll just be looking forward with our league top 20s in full effect at baseballamerica.com. For JJ Cooper, I'm John Manuel. Thanks so much for the download. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.